Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Gujan with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am so excited to be talking art with Augustana College senior Emma Watts, who is majoring in theater and film and is currently directing Lauren Gunderson's Exit Pursued by a Bear at the Honkamp Meyer Black Box Theater in the Bruner Theater Center. Emma, welcome to Talking Art. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I am great. I'm so excited to be able to talk to you. You and I have worked on several productions,
yes.
So I'm a big fan. But you're directing in Augustana now.
I am.
A play called Exit Pursued by a Bear.
Yes.
Yeah. I know you mostly as an actor.
Yeah.
Tell me about your foray into directing.
Yeah. Well, it's my directorial debut.
Ooh,
exciting. It's the first full-length show I'm directing.
You heard it here, folks. Check it out.
Yeah. So within the Augustana College Theater Department, they allow up to 3 student directors every year. So there's a whole application process, and they select students who they feel would succeed and thrive in the position of directing, and I was one of the lucky few to be selected. But yeah, I haven't acted in since the tapes was my last show that I acted in. So
yeah, and you have been, you're directing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about your kind of journey to Augustana. Who are you? Where are you from?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm from Rock Falls, Illinois. Not far from here. I'm only about 45 minutes to an hour. And graduated from Rock Falls High School. Chose Augustana because it was a small town feel in a big city, and can't go wrong with the SLU. It's a beautiful campus.
Yeah.
The theater department is, I always say that we're small but mighty. We've got a lot of talent in all aspects of theater, and the faculty is fantastic with bringing their own knowledge and bringing off-campus knowledge into the department, such as you. That's how we met. They brought you on. Yeah, and I'm just very excited that they've given me this opportunity to direct. I think I hope it's going to be a good show. I know it's going to be a good show. I'll say that.
I have faith in you. So tell us a little bit about the show, Exit Pursued by the Bear.
Yes.
Now, for those who don't know, that is taken from a stage direction from Shakespeare's A Winter's Tale.
Yes.
But it's not that. Tell us about
the
show.
No, it is not. So Lauren Gunderson herself classifies the show as a revenge comedy. And I think it's just that. It has a lot of underlying topics and very touchy subjects, such as domestic abuse. But overall, it's a lighthearted show with deeper meaning. Essentially, the main character, Nan, has a very rough relationship with her husband, Kyle, and in turn decides she's going to seek revenge and duct tapes him to a Lazy Boy recliner and threatens to feed him to a bear.
So how did you get started? You're obviously at Augustana now studying theater and film. And we're going to talk more about film later because I know you've got some exciting things you're working on there.
I do.
But how did you get started in theater? Did you do theater in high school?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first show I ever acted in was my freshman year of high school. And I was Betty Paris in Arthur Miller's The Crucible.
Oh, that was kind of my big high school play too. I played John Proctor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know if you've ever seen the meme of high school girl. I'm so excited after 12 years of dance lessons and 5 years of voice lessons and 6 years of acting class to be playing the third ensemble member from the left. High school boy. My English teacher's making me do the lead in the play. That was me in The Crucible.
Yeah, like, I think that was our John Proctor as well. Our English teacher who also directed the show was like, I think you'd be a great John Proctor. And he's like, okay.
I had done some theater. Like, it wasn't a total blind, but I auditioned and got Proctor. And I remember a friend of mine who was really involved in theater being like, that's a good role, right? And she's like, yes, it's the lead, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, yep. Sweet. Okay.
Yeah. But it's such like a two high schoolers, like as a college student now, it's like I can understand and respect the show. But to high schoolers, it's so long and there's not much there.
Yeah.
But
well, and there's a lot of very adult time, yeah. You know, you've gotten an adulterous affair and
yeah.
All sorts of stuff.
Yeah, but I was in the show and looked at the show and went, yeah, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. yeah, and then I acted. We did, oh God. Well, I don't even remember the next show that we did. But my first official lead mm-hmm. was Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, fun.
That was my junior year of high school. That was my sophomore year of high school because then my junior year COVID hit and we didn't do any theater.
Oh, sure. Sure. So did you know when you were deciding on college that you wanted to major in theater or?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. It was funny because at that time when I was sophomore or junior in high school, yeah. I wanted to study theater and civil engineering.
That's a very common combination.
Yeah, very common. And we had a college and career fair, and I was going around to the different tables going, do you offer double majors in civil engineering and theater performance? And a lot of them some of them said, no, not necessarily. But and Augustana was one of the few who said, actually, we encourage those kind of double majors.
Yeah.
And I went, interesting. Obviously, I didn't pursue civil engineering, but I continued to act and fell in love with it. And I loved the small town feel that Augustana had.
Yeah.
It's a smaller campus with big opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I've studied abroad because I've been here. I've met the amazing Ben Gujan because I went here. I'm able to direct. I'm majoring in film now. Didn't think I'd be doing that. It opened so many doors for me, and I don't regret a single thing about choosing Augie.
I am always amazed when I, you know, kind of meet a new student group at Augie, hearing what their majors are. Because, you know, some of them are theater majors. Some of them are completely different things like civil engineering or geophysicists,
yep.
Physics or,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, one thing that is so great about kind of like smaller liberal arts schools is that encouragement mm-hmm. of that and really that trying to create well-rounded, broadly educated students.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know my freshman year here, I'd known a senior who was studying musical theater and, oh God, was it microphysics or microchemistry?
Yeah.
And like chem student all the way, but added theater performance simply because he could and the classes were accessible. It was an easy major to get.
Yeah.
And that opened so many doors for him because it was a creative outlet, obviously being a very heavy load of chemistry and science.
Sure.
But he loved it, and he had plenty of leads in the musicals here on campus and was
yeah.
a very talented actor. But he studied science as well. And a lot of the friends I talk to, I have a close friend of mine who double majors in biochem and theater performance. And it's such an unlikely combination, but here you can make it work. I know people who have four majors and they make it work.
Wow.
I have two and don't know how I make it work.
Well, that's one of the things, you know, that even if you're not intending on pursuing theater as a career, there are so many skills you learn from theater,
mm-hmm.
whether it's public speaking or presenting or just kind of having that confidence to
mm-hmm.
walk into a room that the audition process teaches you. There's so many soft skills, you know, and we had some scheduling kerfuffles
mm-hmm.
and you said, I'm a theater major. Of course I'm flexible.
Yeah.
And you know, that's
you have to be.
You have to be because no day is ever the same when you are living a life as a performer,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless you're in
yeah.
like – I've been in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway for 30 years, which
mm-hmm.
there are people who have done that.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, you're going from job to job and you never know what your next job is.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of live life in a very flexible, a fluid way,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is a skill that is great for anyone to
yeah.
have because no matter what profession you're in, life is not straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I came across a video this morning of Josh Groban talking at the Jimmy Awards.
Yeah.
And he was like, the best people to hire are theater kids. They can make something big happen on a low budget. They can be thrown into projects last minute and they're used to that and they'll thrive. And I'm like, man, that's kind of true.
Yeah.
We're some of the most flexible people you can meet.
Yeah.
And it's just because it's in our nature. We have to be.
Well, and I love that he brought up the low budget thing because that's what I always think of. Like, I've produced so many plays on $0 or just out of pocket dollars that it's like, just give me the idea and I'll make it happen. Like, yes, having a nice, healthy budget would be nice, but we will make it happen and we're going to make it really cool regardless of how much.
Yeah. And I think having those obstacles in our way, I think forces us as artists to make creative decisions that in the end work out even better than they would have if you had a larger budget. At least I've found that in directing thus far, that sometimes those little workarounds that you have to find end up with better results than what you had initially planned with that nice chunk of cash.
Yeah. It forces you to be more creative and to think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're like, oh, I want this big set piece or this fancy proper solution to whatever the problem is, and you can't do it, you have to find a way that is almost 100% of the time going to be inherently more theatrical and interesting to do it.
Because then the audience is looking at the show going, ooh, that's interesting how they approached that as opposed to doing this.
Yeah.
And it starts making the audience think. And the longer you can get the audience to think, the more they're paying attention to your show, which I think is, if the audience leaves talking about your show, I consider that a win.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I try to approach things. Like, I like pieces that pose questions, not give me answers.
Yes. Like, I'd rather, we're always taught show and don't tell, both in theater and film. It's a very important concept, and I will forever carry that with me. The idea that the playwright is obviously implying something, and it's your job as a performer, as a director, as a lighting or sound designer to help hint towards those things, towards the audience, and not necessarily say, oh, this is what the playwright was trying to do. Here you go, and hand it to him on a silver platter. Yeah. You want to create enough hints throughout the show to help get the audience to think and put those pieces together themselves. Because it helps them engage with the media more as opposed to saying, oh, the murderer was in the closet the whole time. Right. But hinting towards, well, the door handle was open, but they closed the door last time they left the room. Interesting. And hinting towards those things.
Well, and that's what I loved so much about the stacks. And for those who have listened, like, I've been doing immersive theater and Emma, full disclosure. So Emma and I first met. I was brought in as a guest director to direct Small Mouth Sounds at Augustana, which was a play that took place at a silent retreat. So 90% of the play was completely silent, which for me was like, oh, this is so fun. Like, what a great challenge for us.
It was a challenge for us actors, too.
Yeah. And then Emma has worked on both the immersive productions I've produced and directed, the stacks and the tapes. And one thing I really like about the immersive theater is people just get, you know, I think of it as storytelling sometimes as connecting the dots in a theater setting. And we're just going to give you some dots. And it's your job as the audience to connect those dots. I remember one of my professors in grad school talking about one of the differences in theater and film is in film, it is a medium where you're in the audience and sitting back and taking it in, whereas good theater should be theater where you are sitting forward on the edge of your seat and waiting to receive those dots and put them together.
Yeah. One of my favorite things, and I think that's why I navigated towards film, is the idea of telling stories with all of those dots and allowing the audience to connect those dots.
Yeah.
With theater, you're kind of – there's no one area where your focus should be. If a director and a performer did their job correctly, if you were to look anywhere on that stage in any given time, there is something that you can look at and something you can pay attention to that will help further the story along for you.
Yeah.
Whereas in film – I think I navigated to film because there's an element of control that you have. You can control what the audience sees and hears, but you can't control how they feel and how they interact with what they're seeing. And I think there's a fun there's a fun balance between finding those ways to approach film and theater. They're two very different ways of storytelling.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think it's a challenge for me to be doing both of those simultaneously. At the moment, at least, I'm working on two films and directing my show. So, but approaching storytelling in those two different ways of where you can control what the audience sees, but you can't control what they see. It's a fun challenge.
Well, I bet that's something that I would love to hear your perspective on, because I've thought about directing film before, and I've never really made that leap. And part of it is because as a theater director, I love, like you said, of creating this giant picture, and, you know, maybe you're staging in a way where you're kind of guiding the audience's focus to a certain area, but you also have things that no matter where they're looking, there is something interesting going on or something that is reinforcing the story. But in film, it's that choice of, I want you to see this thing. And I don't like making that choice. You know, I like saying, I'm going to give you some things and let you pick.
But I think going from theatrical acting to film directing and producing and writing, I think that helped me be able to make those choices.
Sure.
Because I have the bigger picture of what I want. And as a theater person, I can envision and think about that bigger picture. And then when it comes to like writing a script for a screenplay or directing a show, or directing a film, I should say, I'm able to take that bigger picture that I have and hone in on one element and say, here's what I want the audience to see at this given moment. And then we're going to use these couple of shots to fill in the gaps. And this next key point is going to be in this next shot where we're going to do a wide shot of this really dirty room. And then we're going to do a close-up shot of this coffee cup that's still full, but the coffee is really cold, implying that maybe no one's been here for a while.
Right.
And I think film is, it's a different approach to things.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm still figuring it out because I'm still very new at it, but our film department here and the people we have in that department are fantastic at helping guide us in that direction.
Sure. Yeah. I've been able to work with Stacy with our Metro Arts program with Quad City Arts, and I really love what she's doing over there. And so you are working on a film project about the Radium Girls.
Yes,
right?
I am.
Tell me about that. That's really exciting.
Yeah. So it will be, I'm making my directorial debut, and I'm making my cinematic debut while working on a film at the same time. It's a wild, wild, wild ride.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. As a senior in college, it's crazy. Last November, I went on just kind of a little day trip with some friends. We went to Utica, Illinois, and as we were just kind of walking around, exploring the town, it was a beautiful day outside, we came across their historical museum, and we walked inside one of the buildings, and like, oh, there's another exhibit across the street about the Radium Girls, and we're like, of Ottawa? And she's like, yes. And I was like, I've never heard of the Radium Girls of Ottawa. Sure enough, we walked across the street into the other building, and as soon as you walked in, there's this huge exhibit detailing the stories of these women, and they were Radium Girls, like the ones you've heard of. Most people have heard of the Radium Girls.
I think you know, there's been films and plays and docs in the last decade or so. It really felt like that's when it really came to light.
But for me, at least, I'd always heard about the Radium Girls in like the East Coast, in New York, New Jersey. I'd never known, being from Rock Falls, that there was a group of girls so close to home in Ottawa. And so I'm sitting here, and their exhibit was beautifully put together with letters from the women written, like the letters that the women wrote to their families and wrote to the company they worked for and wrote to each other during this difficult time in their lives. And it really just, it struck a chord with me as, I mean, obviously as a woman myself, I've never worked in a radium dial factory before, so I don't know what they went through.
But and tell us just about that, because some of our audience may not know what the Radium Girls are.
Yeah. So the Radium Girls were a pretty large group of women. At least in Ottawa alone, over 4,000 women worked in this for this company.
Yeah.
They started as radium dial company. They were essentially a clock making factory. During the World Wars, they would need to make clocks that the men and soldiers could see.
Sure.
If it was dark outside, they needed to be able to see the faces on the clocks. And so what they did is they would paint the numbers on the clock faces with radium paint that glowed in the dark. Little did they know that radium was highly toxic and very deadly. And these women were told that it was safe, entirely safe for them to be interacting with and working with. Yeah. And because the numbers on the dials were so small, they needed to have a fine tip brush to be able to paint them.
Sure.
Because they got paid by the clock that they painted.
Sure.
So what they would do is they would lick the tips of the bristles and paint the clock faces. And so they were ingesting radium the entire time.
Right.
And the way radium works is it essentially affects the point of contact. So for a lot of these women, they had very – I don't want to get into detail about the issues they suffered, but a lot of it was regarding their jaws and their mouths.
Sure.
And like it's – they didn't deserve to – they did not deserve what happened to them. I will be detailing what happened obviously in the documentary I'm working on. Mm-hmm. But the really awful thing is a lot of these women never received justice for what happened to them. Because the company they worked for, again, told them that it was safe.
Right.
When women started to getting sick, they actually said, oh, no. That's just that's just an STI. You're fine. And they started brushing them off and saying, this is your fault, not ours.
Right.
Until one woman, Catherine Donahue, got severely ill, bedridden sick. She was a mother of two or three children. She said, I'm going to do something about it. So along with the support of some other women, she was trying to seek out a lawyer to take on their case. But because this company was bringing in a lot of money for the town, when these women started to say, well, we want to sue the company, no lawyers in the area would take on their case because they viewed these women as lesser than. They were like, you guys are a disgrace to our town. This company is bringing so much money in and you want to sue them? But luckily, this man from Chicago, a lawyer named Leonard Grossman, took on their case free of charge. And Catherine Donahue was the only woman who actually received financial compensation of the 4,000 plus women who worked in that factory.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's incredible.
It's a tragic story.
Yeah.
But as soon as I was like, I'm standing there at this exhibit reading about all of this and the dots were connecting in my brain. And I was like, oh my God. And yeah, it's a story that not many people know. And I wanted to, I mean, I had the resources. I have the resources. It's a story that I connected with instantly. And so it's a story that I want to tell. And it's a story I'm going to tell. I'm in the early pre-production phases.
That's so exciting. Are you doing it as part of a class or outside on your own?
Outside on my own.
Yeah.
Outside on my own. Stacey Barton is the theater or film faculty head of the film department here at Augie. She's been a huge help in kind of helping guide me along and giving me some pointers and advice. But yeah, otherwise it's on my own. I'm kind of in the early phases of crowdfunding because unlike theater, you can get away with a very low budget. With film, you gotta have something.
Yeah.
You gotta have something.
Well, and that's something to me that, you know, when I have looked at forays into film, like theater to me, the financial part of it makes sense. It's like, you know, you need some funds to get a space and a build set and costumes and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then you sell tickets and you run a show and like that's how you make your money back. Film is very different because a lot of times it's like we're going to spend all this money to make the film.
Yep.
And then hope that someone sees it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's a tricky business.
Yeah, it really is.
Luckily I have a fantastic mentor who actually visited campus a few weeks ago. Frank Hartz graduated from my high school, grew up with my parents, lived down the road from me. Fantastic resource that I have, but he's dabbled in theater and film.
Okay.
He's directed and produced films, award-winning films. So it's
awesome.
A great resource to have in my back pocket when it comes to film stuff.
Yeah.
But it's tricky. It's you pour your heart and soul into this project. Excuse me. You pour this heart and soul into this project and then no one sees it.
Right. Or you have one screening And then it just sits on a hard drive.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's film's its own special media, especially if you're working outside of like the studio and network system. Like,
yeah.
That's,
yep.
But getting to that point is a very long haul.
Yeah. But I'm thankful for like the opportunities like this. I was interviewed by somebody from the Quad City Times a few weeks ago to kind of get my name in their heads and get people to recognize and get people to know that I'm working on this project, because hopefully it will help me in the long run when I have the film and I'm ready to distribute it. People will go, oh, I remember that. That was an interesting story. I want to go see that.
Yeah.
Film is like, I describe it as kind of like a game of Monopoly. You have to, anytime you pass, but the only thing is anytime you pass go, you don't collect money. 9 times out of 10, you have to pay somebody somewhere.
Well, even, you know, once you have the film, you know, then you have to get it out to festivals.
Yep.
Which is a, you know, $50 to $100 application fee for every same,
depending
on the festival. Yep. But like, yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And usually like you're not getting your ticket revenue because the venue is taking the majority of that.
Yep.
You know, you're really looking for those for the distribution deal.
Yep.
You know, for Amazon to swing in and say, we want the documentary.
Yep.
Here's $100K.
Yeah. But I think we were talking about the crossover between theater and film earlier.
Yeah.
I think one thing with theater is the concept of networking and using the resources that you have.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to do that within film. Like I know in my hometown, I know our small locally owned movie theater. I know the Last Picture House over in Davenport. It's Davenport. They're so close to each other. I'm not from around here. I wouldn't know. But I know they stream smaller independent filmmakers' films.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful to have that ability and that drive to network and shoot somebody an email or give somebody a phone call. Because the worst they can say is no.
Yeah.
But at least you get them thinking. And at least your name and your project is fresh in their mind for if they were to see it stream at another theater and see how successful that did. Then they'd reach out and go, oh, hey, I remember you called us a little bit ago. You had a great showcase over there. Well, would you want to bring it to our theater?
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that I'm not afraid to shy away from in regards to – in regards to my film that I'm working on. I found a Facebook group about the Radium Girls of Ottawa specifically.
Yeah.
And because of that, I've come across people who had relatives actually work in the factories.
Oh, that's cool.
The son of the lawyer who took on her case is in that group.
There
are people who did their doctorate and master's studies on the Radium Girls of Ottawa. I actually have an interview with one of them next week.
Oh, how exciting. That's awesome.
So there is, because all I did was make a single post in this Facebook group chat, I have all of these people who are willing and very excited to talk to me about the project.
Yeah,
so
it's awesome.
Yeah. Doing all of this independently outside of school while balancing my senior year and directing a show is it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way. It's fun.
No. And I mean, I know my college experience was like, that was how I started as a theater producer, because I wasn't able to get into I'd taken my first directing class and wasn't able to get into the directing 2 class just because like people higher up the food chain had priority for registration. And it was like, oh, it's all full. You guys can't get in. And so my friends and I started a production company and produced our own shows on and off campus, like in different locations, you know, which is probably what started my love of immersive theater and non-traditional spaces.
Because
like one of our first shows was in this huge outdoor amphitheater that hadn't been used for theater in decades, you know.
Yeah.
But I learned so much by doing those outside projects when I was in college and becoming my own creator that I felt helped me more than almost anything I did in school, you know, so I'm excited for you and that you're doing this.
I'm very excited. I've had the guidance I needed. Obviously with theater, I had a little bit of experience coming into college. film I had no experience. It was just something that I wanted to dabble in, and I loved it. Yeah. But yeah, I think the magic of at least going to Augie is they understand that people are coming from all different levels of expertise in the different fields.
Sure.
But they cater to that. If they recognize that somebody is a more experienced actor than somebody else, mm-hmm. they will cater to that. And they will meet you where you're at mm-hmm. and help build off of those skills and improve those skills. So to the by the time you walk across that stage, your senior year, you are ready to rock and roll. And I'd like to think I'm at that point. I have a couple of classes I still need to finish for both my majors, but sure. for the most part, I'm pretty confident with where I'm standing.
Well, so what's the plan? Like, you're obviously you're directing the show. You're yeah. making your film. What happens after you walk across that stage and throw your hat?
Well, I'm hoping I'll have a job somewhere.
You're a theater and filmmaker, though.
I am. I'm hoping to find myself in the suburbs around Chicago
sure.
area. I have family up that way. I feel like it will be a good spot to just kind of kickstart things.
Yeah.
And looking at different jobs, making sure that I will personally have time to work on my own projects
yeah.
because I feel like it's inevitable. If I'm working a full-time job, that means I just have money to go towards my own projects.
Uh-huh. Well, in your dream world, like mm-hmm. is the career as a, and I mean, obviously you're exploring directing now and you're also a very, you know, accomplished actor. What do you, you know, what, if you could put yourself 10 years down the road and life changes and that'll change, but like, what is it now? Is it like you're in Chicago as a working actor, a working director, a filmmaker?
I think 10 years from now, if I were to be a theatrical and film director, I think that would be really cool.
Sure.
I think working for a, whether it's a large or a small or a medium-sized film production company mm-hmm. with like my own little cohort, my own team making and producing films while directing theater, I think that'd be the ideal world. Nice. Maybe dabbling in acting a little bit.
Sure.
Because no one can tell me no other than myself, so.
Yeah. Well, and I found, because when I was in college, I was also very, very torn between acting and directing theater. Like, I loved both of them. Directing, I felt like more of an artist.
Mm.
Like, acting always felt, it didn't fulfill me in the same way as an artist, but it was like, this is a thing I do that I'm very good at, and... You know, I think because so much more of acting is prescribed to you by the script, by what the director's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So not that there's not freedom and creativity in that, but it always felt a little more constrained. Whereas a director, I felt like this is where I can really spread my wings artistically and put my spin or stamp on yeah. things.
Yeah. I think approaching directing with a mindset of an actor has helped me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I 100% agree. I think directing gives you more. We were talking about like the small picture and big picture. You see the big picture. You always, at least for me, I always have the final product in mind.
Sure.
As kind of an end goal, and what can I do to reach that?
Yeah.
Within theater. For me, at least, I have my why. Why do I want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing this play now?
Yes.
And I'm using that to kind of act as my end goal. Mm-hmm. Like, here's what I want the audience to take away from this. I want the audience to leave this space not really knowing what they just saw. And I want them to sit and think about that. And I want them to digest that.
Yeah.
And with my show, at least, I'm performing it in the round within the black box space.
Yeah.
The script is... When I first read the script, I was like, people have performed this in proscenium. Why? This script screams in the round to me.
Sure.
Because there's so many moments where parts of it are scripted, where the actors interact with the audience. But for the most part, there's so many moments where the actors have every ability to interact and sit with the audience. Yeah. There's audience interaction within my show, albeit mild. There's moments where you might find an actor sitting next to you for a good 15 minutes. I've been telling my actors and my crew that the fourth wall is there until it's not. There's moments where they talk to the audience and interact with them. And I feel like that makes the whole experience more effective. It breaks down those barriers that the actors have between themselves and the audience. And it breaks down the barriers that the audience has between themselves and the actors. And I think it helps the audience engage more, especially because there's some things in this show where directing them, I go, that's gross, but it's effective, because the show deals with such heavy topics. The way Lauren Gunderson wrote the script, it's so, I don't want to use the word visceral, but it's very, at points, yeah, it's very in your face. Mm-hmm. Because the reality of the situation this Nan is in is very in your face. It's not, we're not trying to, Lauren Gunderson was not trying to glorify the relationship between Nan and Kyle.
Right.
She's humanizing their relationship and pulling back the curtain to show, hey, this is what it's actually like. And I wanted to pay homage to that and honor that, which is why I'm doing it in the round. And you can, if you were to talk to any of my actors or any of my cast or any of my crew, they'd go, yeah, yep, that's it.
Well, and it makes sense too, you know, like the play takes place in this cabin.
Yep.
You know, so like your seating is your cabin, mm-hmm, you know, and there's the character who kind of serves as like a ring girl, as we had discussed,
yep,
before. So
sweetheart,
it's like,
yep,
you have that sense of a ring, and there's a pugilistic element to the relationship between these two characters.
Yeah.
So it's like, there it is.
Yeah. It's a crazy show. It will make you think. It will make you feel. And if you're sitting in the audience making audible reactions of, oh, then I didn't, me and my actors did our jobs right.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you mention immersive theater and connecting the dots and placing those dots.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I did it in the round is because I wanted to play with that. You've sparked my love for immersive theater. Congratulations,
okay.
Ben.
Good.
And I wanted to play with that because there's a lot of things in the script that are kind of touched on, but then they move on and you don't really come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted, I'm a sucker for symbolism.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to have moments where I can build that environment within the space and have pieces of the set visible.
Mm-hmm.
Where an audience member might be sitting in one spot and see this item on the bottom of a shelf and go, huh, why is that knocked over, but this standing? Interesting. And I want the audience to kind of key in on those things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of opportunity for the audience to come away from the show with very different ideas of what they just saw. And part of that's because it's in the round. If you're,
yeah,
sitting in a spot where you're close to actors the entire time, you're going to see facial reactions that somebody across the stage isn't going to see.
Right.
And I think that's the magic of In the Round. I know people are saying that In the Round is really hard to direct, and it is. But obviously, for my directorial debut, what else was I going to do? Why go the easy way?
Well, that's what, you know, I mean, we were talking earlier about that idea of leaning back or leaning forward into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, and I love like a theater like that, Black Box. Like small Black Box
space.
Theater is my favorite theater, because you're right there. You're so connected with the performers,
mm-hmm,
you know, and whether it's in the round or thrust or even in a proscenium in a Black Box, like there's something that's just so much more intimate and connected, and you can't rely on a big fancy set.
Mm-hmm.
To tell your stories, you really have to make it about the acting and about the theatricality, and how you are telling that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really hard in that setting to just to mask stuff with spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, so you really need to get to the root of things. You were saying something about earlier about how you bring your acting into your directing.
Mm-hmm.
one thing that I always think about after having started directing that I really started to be aware of as an actor was kind of realizing, and, you know, this will help you both ways, because like once you direct more, you act differently as well, mm-hmm. because you start to approach your acting of not only like, who is my character? What am I trying to do? But also what purpose am I serving in this story at the same time? Mm-hmm. You know, I remember it was a production of The Hounds of Baskervilles, and I was playing Watson, and you know, the story is like Watson's on stage pretty much the entire play. Like, you know, Holmes is the lead, but like he's in and out mm-hmm. and doing the flashy stuff. But Watson is on stage pretty much the whole show. So I kind of approached it as like, I'm going to use him as like the audience is seeing the story through Watson's eyes. So like a lot of what I was doing on stage was kind of thinking of myself as a camera. And like what I'm watching is what and seeing is what the audience should be watching and seeing, because he is that lens for mm-hmm. them, you know, which I don't know that I would have thought of if I had not had the directing experience.
Yeah.
To think of, oh, how is this character going to work? Mm-hmm. How does he serve the play as a whole?
Yeah. I think one of the ways I brought my acting self into me as a director is I have the knowledge of how to pull apart and unveil the layers of a character that sure. you're playing. And I have a small cast. It's only a 4-person cast. Yeah. You have Nan, Kyle, Sweetheart, and Simon. It's a 4-person cast. And I have the luxury to, within our 3-hour rehearsal periods, to sit down and, as we're going through this show, pausing in a certain spot and going, hey, what's going through your character's head right now? And I am so thankful that all 4 of my actors, they are all fantastic at what they do. And it shows in the final product.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for people to see the work they've put into this show. They have answers. And they are able to just kind of stream of consciousness, just kind of go. And as an actor, also, I'm able to hone in and ask those questions and find the kind of questions to act. Like, is your character sad that your wife is saying this about you? Mm-hmm. Is he angry? Is he embarrassed? Does he not care? And kind of plant these seeds in my actors' brains, because these are the kind of questions that I think about when I'm studying a character or when I'm acting or performing.
Sure.
I think that's one of the biggest things for me, at least, how my acting brain has kind of seeped into my directing brain.
Mm-hmm.
And helping my actors kind of hone in on that aspect of their characters. Because at the end of the day, because it's such a small cast and we're in the round, and all of these actors are on stage the whole time, if not most of the time, they have to be in it. From the moment they step on stage, they are in it. And so helping my actors find a place where they can really think about those characters and figure out their characters' motivations. And my character is sad during this scene, but they're angry as heck in this scene, which that kind of sums up the character of Kyle pretty yeah. good, actually. it's that's one thing I started doing at the beginning of the process, and yeah. they've thrived and they've succeeded and they're killing it. Right yeah. now, I'm excited. It's been a week because we were on spring break last week.
Yep.
So we're coming back to rehearsals after a week off as the day we're recording this tonight. So I'm excited to see what they've been thinking about, if they've been stewing over anything over break. That's always fun. I always like taking a time off and seeing the show with fresh eyes, I think, is always a good thing.
Yeah, it'll be very, very helpful. And mm-hmm. That time is always productive in some way,
mm-hmm.
even if yep. they don't remember lines or
yeah.
struggle on yeah. some blocking when they yeah. come back. It's going to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am so excited to see it, Emma. I'm proud of you. A little proud papa moment for both this and for the Radium Girls project. I'm just excited to see what you're doing and where you're going.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you want to see Exit, pursued by a bear, Lauren Gunderson's play that is directed by Emma. That's going to open on April 10th at the Honkamp Meyer Black Box Theater in the Bruner Theater Center. And it runs Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 13th at 1:30 p.m. Emma, thank you so much for being my guest today on Talking Art. I feel like we could have talked for another hour.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you. Break legs.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, keep kicking butt. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for their support and to our producer, Mark. And for more information and tickets for Exit Pursued by a Bear, you can visit www.augustana.edu/arts. I'm Ben Goujon, and this was Talking Art.